Welcome to NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with your host, Dee Klein. Hey, this is NFP, the Non-Fungible Podcast, with me, Dee Klein. Today's episode is brought to you by the Koi Network. Koi makes minting NFTs super easy and inexpensive. Just drag and drop your file using their NFT wallet, Finny, and Koi takes care of the rest. Minting costs as little as 1 cent, so you can create as many NFTs as you want. And when they're viewed by other people, you even earn Koi tokens that you can use to fund your next series. Check it out at koii.network.
All right, this is a really cool episode of NFP. My guest is Scott Page. He's a legendary musician who's played with Pink Floyd, Supertramp, Toto, among many others, and just has amazing energy. As soon as we connected, we just started talking about really cool, crazy stuff like quantum mechanics and the nature of consciousness and finding contentment. But then we go from there to some really interesting topics about building a business in Web3 and his work in that space, and talk about his company, Think EXP and Think NFT. And I think you'll really enjoy this. So stick around for the whole episode and don't forget to follow and subscribe.
Right on. Yeah. Let's talk though. We're all in a neural network, you know, that's
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. You know, we were just talking about that. You know, we're talking about quantum mechanics. They talk about it, you know, the whole idea of, you know, the moment and the future happen at exactly the same time. You know, that's one very interesting thing. And when we were talking again, I always talk about this because I think it's once this concept is truly grasped and known, your life changes. That you realize that the only thing that's real is us talking right now, right? 2 minutes ago is a complete illusion. 2 minutes from now is an illusion, right? So the only thing that's happening is what is this moment. And there's only one moment. It's always, your life is one moment. It's never, there's no more two moments. You can't walk away from the moment, right? So you start grasping that and you just realize that that's the only thing you can affect, right? This is it. So all that other nonsense that goes on with all that insanity we go through, where we're identified with thinking and we're seeing a movie of all this stuff that's going on tomorrow and this thing, and we're living in this crazy place and you miss everything that's happening that's real, right? So yeah, it's trippy.
Well, and how often are our minds in another place when we're not enjoying the moment in front of us? Like here I am. We just hop right into a conversation about quantum mechanics. Here I am talking face to face, well, on Zoom, with the legendary Scott Page. You know, you've had a fantastic recording, a touring history with some of the greatest bands of all time, Pink Floyd, Supertramp, Toto. And here we are talking, you know. And I was watching a clip today of you playing the Delicate Sound of Thunder video, and you had to have one of the most spectacular mullets I've ever seen in my life.
I had the mullet, man. I was the mullet man. You know, it's funny why I did that. It was interesting. It's like how I even got into that. And I was actually one of the very early, early guys that did that because the thought of long hair in my face all the time was like, oh, okay, that's kind of a drag. So if I get it short, then I let it long, I can kind of have that combination. But actually it was like, you know, it was Diana Ross. When I played with Diana Ross, she was actually one of my biggest mentors, which is very interesting. And what I mean by that, I learned a ton from her. Like she was so unique for me at the time. I mean, that she hit me to so many things. Now, I'll tell you a quick story about this because Diana was, since it was one of my, you know, really important things in my life, I get this call to go, play and do a tour with her. And I really didn't want to go out at the time because I was building my studio, but I needed a new console real bad. So I needed to make some money. So I said, all right, I'll go take this. I'm going to go take this gig for the next, it was like an 8-week tour, go make some money. Okay. So I come back buy some stuff. And so I remember flying in and I get to the rehearsal. We're going into the rehearsal and I walk in the rehearsal and there with everybody. And then she walks in the room and I started realizing it was so strange that I couldn't take my eyes off her. She had such a charismatic thing about her, and I'd been around celebrities and people before, but I was so fascinated what was her, why she had so much magnetism, right? So you know, everybody was all, they, we had to call her Miss Ross and there was all these rules, and I said, yeah, I'm only gonna be here for 8 weeks. She's Diana to me, right? So hi Diana, how are you, right? And so I just got that. So we actually became pretty good friends. And but on the road, it was so interesting because I remember the first night we played, and I was playing in a horn section in that. So there was like four horns and myself. And I remember I couldn't, the first night, I could not take my eyes off of her. I kept watching her because it was amazing how she could command the audience and stuff. It was just really, it's kind of, I don't know, it was something different. So I made a ton of mistakes because I kept trying to watch her and I couldn't read the book because we were reading music. So I went back and I studied the music, right? And I learned it so that I could memorize it so I could just watch her because I wanted to figure out what this magic was that she had. And then I started watching her every night and I started looking for patterns. I'm big on patterns. I try to look for patterns. Everything I do is around patterns, right? So I started, because then you can kind of learn things, how to repeat things once you can start to see the patterns and stuff. So I started watching her night after night. And each of the night, she would get, no matter whether she could sing or whatever, she would get 16,000 people on their feet every night. And I started watching the patterns. And she would do some really interesting things, which became very important to me as I started becoming more of a performer, was the first thing I noticed was that she would always kind of find somebody in the front row that she could see really well, and she would connect with them, like really connect, right? And I thought that was so fascinating because then the people around her would feel, because she would feel like, you know, she sure. was communicating with that person. It wasn't just like I'm standing up there and it's, you know, this wallpaper that we played to, she really
it was real. Yeah.
And she started doing it. And she'd do that around the front, right? She would get everybody and she'd really notice everybody. And then she'd find somebody over here. And then she'd find somebody holding a sign in the back of the stadium, right? And she'd make sure she knew them. So she would introduce herself and really connect with the fans at that level. And I thought that was one of the most fascinating things because it's a really, when you're playing, especially on these gigs, and you got this giant wallpaper of people, right? You don't really get a feel for it. It almost feels like you're playing to a piece of wallpaper because, you know, they're that big and you know you're that sure. big too. So it's like, it's kind of a funny thing. So I use that technique a lot. And I also noticed that she was, one of the things she could do, which was fantastic, was it was not that she was a good dancer, but she wasn't a dancer's dancer. She was a singer more, and she danced some, she moved well, but she was so good the way she stood and how she shaped her body and dealt, can control herself, how she stood there and looked and the way her hair was. And I thought, oh, okay, I could see she'd move her hair and would fling around and the lights would capture it. So that's why I grew my mullet. I said, I got to have hair so I can flip my hair around. So like when I play it and stuff, it's going to be noticing, right? How do I get people's attention? And that whole thing is standing. And then I started realizing, I said, man, I went out the next day because when she stood there, the way she shaped, kind of angled her body, the way she just stood there was so appealing, right? So I went out the next day because I said, I got the saxophone strap around my neck and I can't, this is like goofy. I can't do this. So I went and bought a stretch guitar strap and put it on my saxophone so that I could take and stretch my saxophone down out of the way. And I could get myself in a really good pose when I'm standing there so that I can basically attract, you know, try to, how do you keep attention? Remember, I'm trying to be a performer. I'm trying to figure out the rules of being business because it's my business, right?
And that didn't get in the way of your technique at all with the, you know, different way of holding it and so forth?
No. I still, to this day, that's what I use is that kind of a strap because it comes around my neck. Because that actually, the neck pulling on it, this goes around my shoulders and my body. So yeah, it works out much better. But yeah, she was something. And you know, I mean, very talented. And that was really a lot of fun. That tour was great. And it was actually with Elvis's conductor, Joe Guercio. So I got to know Joe and got all kinds of great stories about Elvis. He had one of those TCB famous, you know, diamond things that Elvis gave everybody. But Joe, yeah, he conducted for Elvis for years. He was great. So yeah. Anyway, there's a little Diana story. It's like about my. That's how my mullet came. So I attribute again having a mullet because of Diana Ross. There you go.
So you wonder, like, how much of that, like, just talking to you now, there's an energy that you exude. There's a, you know, an enthusiasm that just projects from you. How much of that with Diana Ross or you is natural, and how much of it is like deliberate, planned, practiced?
No, it's just, you know, it's for me, I am the most thankful, grateful human you will ever meet. I'm just telling you, I feel so thankful for the ride that I have, and mostly because I took a heavy inward journey quite a few years ago, and that changed everything for me because I did it. And so now, you know, I don't like, okay, I'm going to try to be cool, but I don't do that. This is who I am. I mean, I love people. I love hanging out. I love the moment. And like I said, everything is about the ride for me. I care about the ride. I don't worry about the outcome. You know, if I take projects on, the outcome will take care of itself. It's all about the ride because the ride is what's happening that you're in, right? That's that moment thing. And so once you grasp, like we were talking about, the fact that this is the only thing that's real, and once you realize that this is where it's at, then you can constantly check with yourself by asking yourself, where am I right now? What am I feeling? Am I feeling any anxiety, tension, or fear? If I'm feeling any of that, unless there's a lion chasing me or something's actually physically going on, I know I'm identified with a thought. So then I can basically go, wait a minute, stop this insanity, right? And so I try to flip that out. So because of doing that, I've now gotten to the point where I basically flip from being the thinker to being kind of the watcher. So I'm constantly watching myself. And by living in that space, it changes everything. And I think it just, you know, I like I said, I'm just very exuberant, I guess. People say that to me. I don't realize it. I'm just doing my thing, man. I'm just having a good old
ride. It's just who you are. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
who I am, right?
Yeah.
Because my mom and my dad, I had the best parents in the world. You know, I got very, I won the lottery with parents. They were so good, so kind. And they, you know, they just took care of me and they taught me the good things, man. My mom and dad, they were so kind as people. They would always do things for people and they were just, exuberant kindness. My mom would give everybody, you know, everything. You know, you could do anything for her. You could never do anything for her. It was never her, but she was like this giver like crazy. So I think probably that, the parents, and then clearly taking that inward journey just completely changed my point of view of everything. Because when the more awake you are, the more aware that you're aware, you just start to realize how incredible this all is, right? It's like, what a gift, right?
Were there times when you were performing, you mentioned it with Diana Ross, how you were distracted. Were there times when you were performing where you would get kind of overwhelmed with that feeling and maybe, you know, lose your place in your music?
That feeling, you know, that really came more for me later on, right? Okay. That was after I started, you know, what happened for me was I ended up, you know, I used to tape every night when I used to play club gigs, right? You know, I'd play 5, 6, 7. That's what we did back in the day. We played club gigs every night because that was a ton of places to play. And every night I would tape, I'd take my cassette machine, I'd set it up and I'd tape myself and then I'd get in the car and then on my way home, I'd throw it in the car and I'd listen to myself back to critique myself. You know, oh, it was flat. I was sharp. Oh my God, that was the worst stuff. But I remember there was like probably half a dozen times over a 7 to 10 year period that I listened to that tape and I went, huh, that was me? Where did that even come from? And it always mind boggled me because I could never understand. I couldn't just bring that back. Something happened. I played like I never played before. I played lines. I played licks. I did things that I didn't even know I knew, right? And I heard stuff and I'm like, where did that even come from? And it wasn't until later on when I started taking this inward kind of journey, getting into meditating a lot and that I realized that what had actually happened is I stopped thinking. Thought dropped. And when you start going into the teachings and start learning about, you know, this concept they call presence and waking up, right? Or enlightenment. The idea of that is really the fact that you realize, you know, you're not this meat suit. You're actually, you're all just part of this whole thing and you don't die. This piece of it just continues on. I mean, you know, it's fascinating. You blink and you're 15, you blink, you're on your deathbed. It's that fast. And I know there's certain people, I know it happened for me on April 9th, 10, 12, 2011. I woke up and rubbed my eyes. And that's when I realized, I said, holy crap, I blinked and 50 something years went by. And I went, how did that even happen? It didn't seem like there was any time. And that was when I realized I finally knew what they meant when they say time is an illusion. Right. Mm-hmm. That's when I knew what that meant, not where I understood it, because that whole thing of all this spiritual stuff, the minute you say you understand it, you've missed it. There's these crazy pointers. And the whole game is about awareness. They always talk about being aware. Right. And what is it? But the trick is how do I know I'm aware that I'm aware? That's the puzzle to figure out, because your mind and your ego will tell you you're aware. all day long. And it's really going past that. And it gets to the point. So all meditations, all teachings, everything point to the same thing, the state of no mind, right? That's what it is. And so the question is how do I know when I'm not thinking, right? How do I know what is that, right? And once you taste that, everything changes, brother. Your life is completely different because then you see reality for the first time. And once you see that and you taste it, then you understand that this whole thing is, we're hoodwinked. Our egos and our mind hoodwink us. They make us think something completely different than what's actually there. So I always try to tell everybody there's nothing more important than this. And because once you start to figure that out, it's like when I go to play now, I say it's like my opportunity to connect with the source or get closer to God or, you know, nature, whatever you want to call that. Because remember, right, the biggest obstacle to knowing God is the word God, because it creates an image that makes you think, and now you've missed it, right? You create this duality between you and this thing, right? And there is, it's doesn't work that way. Maybe for some people that's fine. I know it doesn't work that way. It's just something that now I've been able to have tasted and understand now at a totally different level, where it's not an understanding, it becomes a knowing. So it's changed everything about my playing, about everything I do now. And so you start to learn how to stop thinking, right? And I can actually say now, after many years of deep contemplating and things, I finally figured out the switch to flip thought away, make it go away, and stop thinking. And what's so stupid about it, it's so simple, it's ridiculous, and everybody can do it. But our egos and our mind and our thinking stops us from experiencing that. But I can just tell you, if you devote yourself to wanting to learn and wanting to take that inward journey, you will stumble upon it. Some people get it sooner, some people get it later, but it is the greatest gift you will ever get, because a fear goes away of everything. You don't fear dying, or I don't believe you die, right? I think it's just the meat food goes away and you're still here, right? Because it's trippy. It's like the whole thing. But anyway, that's a whole other crazy subject, but my favorite.
Yeah, very
subject.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's my favorite.
I feel subject. Like, you know, the creative process, you know, you talk about God. I think it's the idea. When I think of the creative process, it's like, in a way, we're like closer to what God is, in a sense, you know, lose a sense of time when I'm creating.
Well, there's no time. That's the thing. Time is an illusion. We make time up in our minds, in our head. It just is. Everything just happens, right? And everybody says, well, how can time be an illusion? I blinked and 55 years where something went by. And I'm like, huh? So, I mean, there's a trippy part of this, because it doesn't feel like there was any space between that period and this period, right? Like it was just a blink. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, what a trippy thing. So life's crazy, but this is the most important thing I think anybody can ever do. And the goal is to die before you die. And that's because once you do that, then like I said, fear completely goes away. And once fear goes away, everything, life becomes way more playful, right? And you become just more joyous about it. And you start to realize that there's the upside of down. So even when you're getting pounded, you're like, okay, it's okay. You can surrender to that and let it happen, because as it happened, if it happened, it's over. So the point is surrendering to what is the game. It's about surrender, right? The moment because remember, once it's happened, it's happened. You cannot change it. It's over. So I always see people, it's like, oh my God, my friend, his car got smacked. He bought a brand new car. And he was so excited about his new car. The next day, he comes out to his car and somebody sideswiped it, right? I'm telling you, he suffered about that for months. Like, I couldn't even believe. And he was so pissed off. And he just took the car and got fixed. I kept saying, dude, it's over. So the lesson to be learned is to surrender and let it go, because the only one that's suffering is you, right? And so that whole game we play is insane. We are insane, man. The human condition it's crazy. I mean, we are once you start to become, you flip this narrative from the thinker and you start to watch. And once you start to see yourself watching, you start to go, wait a minute, is there two of me? Right? That's the first like revelation is, huh? Who's watching? Like, how does that work? Right? And then it gets a little crazier. So, you know, it's once you go down this path, though, I'm telling you, man, this is the one that changes everything, because then you accept what is. And you can tell how you're doing. And a good, great way to tell how you're doing on the journey is, you know, your life is like, you're all up, everything's really good. And then all of a sudden something goes wrong. Oh, I'm down and down. And then I work, something happens good, and I go up and down. And so your life goes, you're up in this dang roller coaster ride. But as you become more awake, because what'll happen is as you start to become, you start to realize, oh, there's a freaking seed of grace in this down. Oh, there's a lot of, this is powerful. This is good, what I'm learning right now. So you start to look at the things happening to you that are bad as wonderful things, right? So you flip the narrative. Mm-hmm. So you start to go, you start to understand that there's an upside in down. And so now your attention flips to the upside of down instead of when it's happening to you, you're like watching it and you're saying, okay, there's something really good in here that's going to come out of this. And it always does. I don't care what it is. And what that is really how you handle it. Remember, that's all you care about. So as you're on this journey and you become more aware, you'll notice instead of your valleys being deep like this, they start to go like this and they start to be a little faster. You go down, but you come back up a little faster until the day comes where you start to go and you flatline. Right? And when that day comes, you're like, it's crazy because you realize you're not attaching to something that happened. You're observing it and you're becoming part of it and you're aware of it and you're embracing it in a different style. And it doesn't even matter. It's like, even for me, it's like, it goes even to as far as death. I mean, to sit with a dying person is one of the greatest gifts of all, because what it does is it forces you into this state of presence that is just a different place, man, that contemplating the thing that goes on. And I try to tell people, you know, one of the greatest gifts with me is I was so thankful I held my mom on her last breath. And that was one of the most profound, incredible experiences I ever had. And it just made that moment change my life in a way that I realize again, that this meat suit goes away, but you don't die. Death is not something to be feared. It's part of the journey and it's going to happen like that. Right. I mean, it's going to feel like it's that fast. Right. And so,
so how do you facilitate moving toward that way of thinking?
It really happens once you see reality, and reality happens when thought drops. So that's why, so for like meditating, right? So meditating a lot, you kind of meditate because people talk about trying to stop the monkey mind from running around in your head while you're trying to still. I mean, some people I know, I can't meditate. They can't take it, right? Because they got to have their mind working all the time. And you can see that. But if you become diligent about it and keep slowing it down, you start to become more aware. You start to become more of observant of what's going on and what you're feeling. And then as you go through meditation. So for me, the trick that really helped me was in a meditative state was I will sit there and I will stare at plants. I will like put every bit of my attention that I have staring at the plant. But where I put my attention is I'm maybe looking at the object, but all my attention is on the silence and the stillness that is around everything. So the minute you start putting your attention on the no space, the silence, the no thing, and I don't care, man, the freaking wind can be blowing, the trees are flying, the rain's coming down. But if you put your attention on the stillness and the silence that surrounds all that, it seems to take you inward. And my whole thing is going into what I call wide mode. And that is where I'm putting my attention, but I can, everything around me, the attention is on the space and everything around me and the stillness and silence that's around it. And that really starts to still. And the minute you feel thought drops, because I remember it happened for me for the first time, is when it dropped, I felt this sense of peace, insane peace. It was like, oh, and then my mind went, what is that? And then I'm back. Oh, dang, what happened? But I tasted it. It was like, you know, it always goes down. They always talk about it. If you never tasted an orange, I could tell you what it tasted like all day long. And until you actually tasted that orange, you would not know what it is. I don't care how much description. Again, that's what, words are pointers. And that's why the point is, once you taste that one taste of your thought dropping, that's when I became an addict. Because I said, that's the game. That's the puzzle to solve. That's the enlightenment, the ultimate game to figure out is that. So from that point on, then you start doing it. All of a sudden you can drop it. It goes a little longer. You get a little more space between it. It'll you can hold it for a 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, and five, and then all of a sudden you start to go, oh, you start to see this shift, and then it's like, okay, now you can just shift into it, and it's just a little, it's a little one of those little quarter turns, very tiny little twist, but dude, it's the best thing you've ever had. There's nothing better. Nothing better. So anybody out there watching this, I'm telling you, go do that. Everything will change. Everything you do will change. Everything will become more alive and more real. And you won't take everything so seriously. It becomes much more playful, right? And once you get to that point, then you don't worry about the outcomes. You don't worry about the other things. You just know that you're, I mean, listen, I can tell you how many times I've pounded and gotten down and thought I was like, but I always got through it.
Right.
Right? I mean, no matter what, it's like crazy.
Hey, in cooperation with the Coin Network, I am presenting Atomic Zombies by Dee Klein. You can find these at atomiczombies.io. We've got 10,000 zombies that will eventually be available, each with their own set of random generative characteristics. You can watch your zombies' characteristics unlock, emerge, and evolve as they receive more attention online, powered by the Koi Network and proof of real traffic. Check it out at atomiczombies.io.
And we put ourselves through all this insanity to get to the other side, and we get to the other side of it. 99.999%. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't things that are real issues and they happen, but what you'll find once you take this point of view, you still have those things, your bills, your stuff, your favorite, but you're not attached to the thinking and you can be much more clear. Because what will happen is when you start suffering, because that's where the suffering can be the greatest gift, because one day you'll come to the point, I can't take it anymore. And that was like with me. I went through a period of time and I said, done. I'm not going to do this anymore. Deuce. And that's when that was the moment that I flipped to start going down this path and saying this was important for me. And it's a long, kind of a crazy story how that all happened. But there's nothing more important than this. And it's one I think we need. And I think consciousness is what we need to really happen. It's awakening consciousness. That's our only job. That's your job. It's my job. Our only job on this planet is help consciousness unfold. That's it. That's why you're here. Nothing else. Building businesses, all that stuff, that's all great. That's all cool human stuff. But your job is to help consciousness unfold and wake up, right? And that's where we're in that wake up stage right now. And there's a lot of people asleep because these devices, man, they take you over. Yep. Man. People are in them. And listen, I'm on mine all day long because that's how I do my work.
Me too.
Right?
Yep.
It's crazy. So, but it is, you know, getting to the point where you can still free think and not be taken over is a really important thing. And hopefully as a world right now, as we're watching the world basically truly wake up, if you're watching globally what's going on, people are done. The old system is breaking down, and people are now really starting to see what's happening, how we've been, you know, listen, we've been slaves to this monetary system. You know, they go out and say, hey, we need $6 trillion coming up. How many zeros is that? Boom, hit a button. They go, give it to the people. Oh, yeah, now you got to pay us for that. You got to pay all the taxes on that. And it's like, huh? It's like, you know, and you're seeing inflation. You know, that's why I like, you know, I follow a lot of cryptocurrency and stuff. And, you know, you look at it, Bitcoin and the dollar hit parity in 2011. Well, Bitcoin went all up to $50,000+ in 10 years to the dollar. The dollar is losing all its money. And right now we're watching inflation just completely kill it, right? It's clear that this is not something that's just happening. And there's a reason for it. You know, we want to put us on a centralized systems. You know, the money wants some control. But because of all the freedom that's coming through crypto and NFTs, which I believe is freedom for the people, it's the area of business I spend a lot of time in. That's my whole business now, because I think it's one of the most important things to come along, where it actually allows the people to take control again of the currency. And that's the battle we're in right now. And so the more people wake up, and again, waking up is also realizing that the AI is, the machines are taking over right now. They really are. And they're getting smarter and smarter. And people that say, oh, they'll never replace humans. Be careful for what you're saying there, because right now, especially with quantum mechanic, you know, quantum computing, because, you know, regular computing is basically on or off. Yes or no, right? You got the two states, binary, right? Yep. Now with quantum, it's yes, no, and maybe. So now it starts putting that thinking in. And now if you think about all the computers, all the data we're feeding in there from the humans in there, and it's just crunching and crunching. Now you're seeing them doing art. They're doing music. They're older. So there's a real.
And pretty well, yeah. Pretty darn well.
Oh, no. We have just scrapped. It's well enough that we're seeing that what's coming, if people are waking up, that the game is about to change dramatically. Yep. Right. And it's going to be a very interesting time as we move forward. It's a very crazy time. So I think the planet is awakening now. At the same time, I think we're going to see a golden era that's going to be incredible, but it's going to be tough for a little bit. We're going to go through some really heavy roller coaster from my point of view, just at least looking again. I follow the financial markets and global things that are going on.
Let's talk about that. I know I've studied a little bit about you and how when you were touring with the, you know, these groups, you were the guy that was reading the books about business and how to run a business and how to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, so that's something that's always been a passion for you. And now, of course, we see that in the NFT space. That's a big thing for you. And it seems to be time and time again, I talk to people who are creative people who encounter NFTs who are like you, kind of mindful of like the business side of things. And they see this space and they're like, it's like a light bulb goes on and they go, oh, this is what I've been looking for years.
Oh, listen, an NFT, people don't understand what it is. This isn't about the ape JPEG that's worth $1 million. They can't understand why it's worth $1 million. Well, let me, I'm gonna give a little explanation here why this is thing. First of all, NFTs, it's not just about art. NFTs, you can build business models on because they're programmable. And you can put rights, roles, and permissions into these NFTs that I can hand to somebody else that I can empower them to create and build on top of it. And then I can have the blockchain or the robot network basically handles all the transactions and manages it in what they call the smart contract. So when you start to look at what that does, and again, an NFT is a non-fungible token for those people that don't know. And what is fungibility? Let's start there real quick. A fungible item is like a dollar bill, right? If you have a dollar bill, I have a dollar bill. It's exchangeable. It's the same. I can give you mine. You can give me yours. I can leave away, walk away, and everything's the same. Something that's non-fungible makes it unique. It's like my saxophone is the only one. Mm-hmm. If I make that an NFT, that's the only one in the world of that. And so there's not another one of that exact saxophone. There may be other saxophones, but that saxophone now is considered. So once you attach that, now that creates value to that. Plus what happens, NFTs that are interesting is there's a secondary market. I can buy that NFT, and depending on what the value of that is, it may go up. I have a place that I can sell it. So it's very empowering to the people, right? Because this gives the power of the currency back to the people to be able to create things, work with other people. So I'm right now doing a drop of NFTs where I'm getting all these other artists to build on top of them, and they get the rights to go build on it. So I'm giving them a rights, and so I'm extending it. But what's beautiful is I can put my royalty into the blockchain, and every time it's sold, the minute the transaction happens, I get money in my wallet. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it also allows for abilities to, you know, fund businesses and do things without having to sell equity. You can basically bring people in. So it's like what we're finding in the community, if somebody's got a really killer NFT idea, it takes a bunch of people to put these things together to make them go out there. You bring the team together, you say, okay, in the smart contract, you're going to make 5%, you're going to get 5%, you're going to get 5%, whatever the numbers are, you break down, you build it into the contract, everybody works, and they believe in the project, and you've run the numbers. I'm going to sell 5,000 of these things at, you know, let's say one ETH or whatever, is $1,000 a piece. You can say that's how much money it's going to be. My 5% is going to be worth this much. So it's just really about the people working on it to make it happen. And so we all work together. The minute the drop happens and they sell, everybody gets paid. It's a beautiful model. It takes out all that middleman stuff that gets in the way, right? So yeah, NFTs are a really big thing. And it's really my whole world is around that now, everything I'm doing. Because, you know, again, I've been a business guy, just a little background. You know, my whole thing is I came from a musical family. My father was a musician, played 14 instruments. He was on a television show called The Lawrence Welk Show. So I grew up on TV, right? So I grew up around that whole thing. But he was a total serial.
I remember watching it at my grandparents' place.
Yeah, that was it. It was only 7 channels on at that time. And it was like, that was the big variety show every week. I mean, that show's still on television. That's one of the I think I'm not, it may be the longest running television show of all time because it's never gone off the air. It's still continuing.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But it's crazy. But so because of my dad's business thing, we had boat businesses, lighting businesses, candy businesses. My dad was one of the guys that worked and invented the wah-wah pedal along with Brad Plunkett and those guys, started all that stuff, started Sound City Recording. So I've been around this whole thing. So I love the business side of stuff. So yeah, you're right. When I was on the road, I used to read books. I'd be reading Search of Excellence and all these business books. And Gilmore would come up to me, you know, Dave, and he'd say, what are you doing? I said, dude, I'm reading business. I'm going to have you a business. He'd go, yeah, okay, kid, go for it, right? I said, I am, Dave. I'm going to go make this happen, Bill. So luckily, after I got out of, that, I started my company called Walt Tucker, and that became Seventh Level. And 18 months later, we ended up taking the company public. So I went and started, got a company, a public company. That was really great. Hey, Dave, I started a business. So that was good. So that was fascinating. But yeah, I love business, and I really love what's happening in this space of NFTs. It's so important. Every business, I don't care if you're a hair salon, a clothing store, a gym, NFTs will be part of everything because they are.
Yep.
They're the ultimate loyalty program because you can build utility and things into them that people can have, and you can tier them, and it's just, here
we go. Yeah, so of course it's Think NFT is the latest basic platform that you've created for this purpose. Is that accurate? You're the CEO and founder of Think NFT. Is that accurate?
Yeah, actually my company is Think Experience and
right.
Think EXP. And Think EXP was really focused on the immersive entertainment space, because right. I realized you can't sell music anywhere. There's nowhere to sell music anymore, right? The whole business model is completely collapsed. You got streaming, but it's horrible for artists. You know, a million streams will generate right. maybe $4,000 to $5,000. The problem is on Spotify, I think that I spread the herd of number that only like, you know, 3 to 4% of the entire catalog on Spotify reaches a million streams. So
and they're making
like
a few thousand dollars.
Wow. To make it. And that's why I love NFTs so much, because I'm now seeing people actually making real money, artists making it happen. And I call it, it's the people's movement. And a real quick story, I go to these NFT meetups, and I went to one and I tell this story all the time. So if somebody's ever heard me, they're going to hear it all the time, because I think it's an important one. So I want to catch everyone to get this. I went, and there was this girl, she was 19 years old. She got up to speak, and she said, yeah, I'm a photographer. I'm learning photography. I love doing photography. I want to do it all my life. I got into NFTs 9 months ago. It's just now I live off my NFTs. I pay all my house, my rent, my car payments, everything off of it. And she was so proud. And I carved a little piece off for my community center in all of my NFTs. And I gave them 2.5 ETH. That was $10,000. So I want to ask anybody, how many artists do you know that are out there selling their works at 19 years old, that are learning the trade and was able to give $10,000 to a community center and live off of them? That's the power of what this is about, because it's not about lots and lots of people. The old models, we had to get out to a lot of people and everybody control it. Now it's about going small and building a hive. I always say, if you want to survive, you got to build a hive. Everything is moving into groups now and of like interest and things that people care about, right? We're moving. That's why you see Facebook groups. That's why you see Twitter spaces. That's why everything is moving into that, where people are coming together. And that's where the business models are. So, yeah, it's fascinating. We're in a very interesting time. And it's very exciting. And I'm just thankful, too, with all the upheaval that's going on the planet right now, this space is on fire. And I'm telling everybody there, you get in there, go in there and start learning about crypto. A couple things. I'm going to give people two places to go if you want to start getting this figured out, because I really believe you need to put, it's 30 to 40 hours of work. You have to put in before the light bulb goes off, and you'll start to go, okay, I see how I'm going to apply this to what I'm doing, right? So anybody that's building any business, I don't care what it is, if you're an artist, your business, this is really important stuff right now, because this is where the money, if you care about making money, if it's a hobby, then don't worry about it, right? Then that's cool. Just do your hobby and go. But if this is about being in business and making it happen, this is the place where the money is. But the most important thing about this space is the community, right? This is community-based. Everybody wants to help each other. So a couple things. You need to learn about cryptocurrency, too. We should be learning about Bitcoin. We should be learning about those things. And by the way, you know, we're going to go through some capitulation right now. And there's going to be one more bite at the apple, I think, for Bitcoin and some of these things. Ethereum, that's what you want to learn. But don't go out there and be goofy and just start buying stuff, dollar cost average into this thing. But we're in a market now where it's pounded. We're going to see, because of what's going on globally, we're going to go through things, but there's going to be some opportunities. So I recommend that people think about picking up a little bit of cryptocurrency, but stick with the big names. The Bitcoin, Ethereum has got a lot of legs. Be careful of all the crazy altcoins, because you can get killed, but you know, it's easy. Go get yourself up to speed, at least learn a little bit, and go online. So there's two things I'll get people to get started. Go everything you need to learn, you're going to learn online. You don't need anything. It's the greatest tools. You got education at your fingertips. Go into YouTube and type in Whiteboard Crypto. Whiteboard Crypto is a great place. There are these little 7 to 15 minute explanations on everything about crypto, about, you know, staking and what is a DAO, what's proof of stake, what's, you know, how to buy and sell crypto, what's, you know, all of the things you can learn about it. And they'll give you these little bite size to kind of get you up to speed. The other one is Crypto Casey. Type that in there. She's a girl that's probably one of the most articulate educators I've seen in the space. She is so good at the way she explains things. That's a good place to get started, to go down the rabbit hole, at least get your game going. I tell people, man, you can sit there and watch television, or you can throw these things on and start learning. I'm all about going school, because it's really important to get educated. And right now is the greatest in time in history for the independent artists and stuff and people to build a business that I've ever seen. And so, you know, spend your time learning, but you got to go to school. I teach a thing called SPACE, and I'll give it real quick. It's called Story Plan Army Conversion Education. And I also put a / execution, right? It's education execution. And story is, everything is about story. NFTs, everything is about the story. Because how do you rise above the noise is the story, right? And what makes you unique. And now, the story that matters is not so much the one as, hey, where are you from? I'm from Cincinnati. I tell artists, oh, I'm a guitar player from Cincinnati. But nobody cares about that. They care about what you stand for. What problem are you solving? What is it? What you stand for is more important than what you sell. Because you're getting people around. Now, the other reason you want to get the story is because the story gives you keywords and phrases that you can then go growth hack about. And with those key story, with that story and everything, you can go through, because we have access to data and ways to find things now, hire a growth hacker. You can go find the people that care about your story and put your message right in front of them. Because if you're selling something, you want to convert, right? It's all about not just scattershotting anymore. We can basically be very tight and clear about putting it in front of the right people. So that gives you a better chance. So story and then plan. I teach the fact that go learn Lean Startup principles. You just type in Lean Startup principles, start learning about Lean Startup. There's a set of principles and Silicon Valley runs all over Lean Startup now. And there's a thing called the Lean Canvas, which is a 1-page business plan. That's it. You know, nobody does 60-page, 80-page business plans. It gets money. Nobody cares. Nobody reads that. They just want to see this 1-page plan tied to a set of an executive summary that you can see the players, what it is, and kind of overview, and then your business, the business model, right? And so your financial. So this is the game. So, you know, again, going in there, learning, getting in there, go look at the Lean Canvas, build your story, because once you have this plan in place, and you know what you're going to go do. And what's great about this whole Lean Canvas mechanism of learning is the most important thing about it is it teaches you not all what you're going to do, but it also tells you what you're not going to do. Because that's the most important thing. Because in the Lean movement, it's always about doing what's the smallest thing you can do that's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. What's the simplest, smallest thing that's going to make this happen? What is the smallest thing you can build that's going to give you the biggest bang? So you really hone down, you take all the other stuff out, you really focus on that one thing that you can then measure, right? Because it's all about build, measure, learn. That's the whole game of building a business. You want to build something, measure it, and then learn, and then keep altering. Second thing is fail fast. If you're going to fail, fail quickly so you can pivot. You want to know that it's a flop as quick as possible, right? That's why, and then the other thing is test and validate everything before you pour any gas on it. So there's all these methodologies of how you test and you you do things before you do it. So like I used to go with my building, because I built tech companies and I want to check user interface. I'd go to Starbucks and I'd find people sitting around and say, hey, can I buy you a cup of coffee? Would you mind kind of looking at these drawings and stuff and give me feedback, right? And so I'd run them through, and there's a whole series of way you ask questions in with Lean Startup. That's something you can learn. You can get into that by learning. And from that, you find out, you kind of get an answer where you want to go. Once you feel like, okay, I got a product market fit, then you start pouring your gases, because one of the other tenets is do not run out of resources. If you got $1,000, you don't go spend that $1,000 until you know what you're going to do and how you're going to turn that $1,000 into $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 or some kind of 10X. So it's all about learning that stuff. So that's where you get into the lead. So that's the plan. Then the army, the A is the next. That's the big one, because it's all about influencing influence. Who are your super fans? Your army are the people that are the closest to you, that have everything. It's your super fans. It's the influencers that you have around you that you don't even really think about, the people that might be around you. You know, like I tell the guys in the band, do you know your super fans? Oh, you have super. Yeah, I got a couple people. They show up all the time. I said, you know what they do? No, I have no idea. Oh, that one, he builds websites. And this guy over here is a video editor and does video stuff. Oh, really? He's your super fan and you need to get websites up. You need to get stuff. You have an opportunity to enlist those people into your model. And what's great is with NFTs, you can enlist them in, and now they've got a mechanism to pay them. That's what's so good about this model, right? So you start to learn who the people are and the influencers around, and you build your army, because it really is the small group. Because we now know that 60% of your revenue will come from 1 to 2% of your audience. That's the most important. So your most important people is to identify the super fans, those people. And the whole model is based around where we're going, right, or where we're at now. It's actually Kevin Kelly coined this from a Wired magazine years ago. It's called 1,000 True Fans. A true fan is somebody who'll spend $100 a year on you. If I have 1,000 fans that will spend $100 once a year, that's $100,000 in revenue, right? So my model is go small. You don't go big. You identify the core group. Build a repeatable model. That's another part of the lean startup thing, is how do I repeat this model? And you basically build that audience and you get it. Once you got that, and I even say, it's not even 1,000 true fans now, especially with NFT, it's 100. Let's go get 100 people on board, because now you have, you know, you've got your Twitter account, which is like a 24-hour cocktail party. So you can go build your audience. You don't need anything now. You don't need anybody. You can do this. Build your audience. You can now take the order on your phone. You can take credit cards. You can take freaking, you know, you can do all, you're set up, right? And the tools are cheap. So this is just about learning education. So once you got your army in place, because then you can figure out what they do and you bring them in first. They get the revenue model started. They allow you to kind of build your stuff, and then you figure out how you can use your army. That's why having your army in NFTs and me being able to put the rights, roles, and permissions embedded in the content that I give them, then they can go off. I can empower my whole army of people to make money with me, right? I can start the process and say, I got a cool idea. I want you guys to extend it, and then you guys are going to make all the extra stuff on top of it. Now we got something that's powerful to kind of grow your business. So then you just start scaling from there once you get that thing done. And then it goes to C. The C in space is conversion. So it's learning how conversion funnels work. And they just go into Google. Man, remember Google, what's a conversion funnel? You just start asking questions in the freaking thing, and you can learn everything and start finding the experts. Go on Twitter, start following all the people. If you want to get into NFTs, go in there, put hashtag NFT and just start following. NFT, get your feed filled, start reading, click on links, start learning. Get into the community. Just get in there. You don't need anybody, right? It's there. And then the last, the E, which I'm going to say education first, because all the stuff I just talked about, if you don't get educated, you can't do it. So you got to go to school. But the good news is school is in the palm of your hand. You can be studying all day long. You know, it's funny, I don't even listen to music anymore. I just listen to people talking to me all day long, spoken word. I'm on Twitter space. I'm listening to podcasts. I'm just trying to stay educated, because this market moves so quickly and you're always looking for new ways of tokenomics and ways to use NFTs to do things. And the more you can do is build it into your business. And so that's the education part. So you want to go get yourself educated by just using the tools. Start with those ones that I got going. And then I'm going to go back to execution, which is the last part of the E, because everything I'm talking about here is if you don't execute, none of it matters. Ideas are worth a million, are worth nothing. Everybody's got an idea. And it's so funny to me when I teach a lot of startup, and I taught it at USC, and I taught my space framework is what I use. And so I would sit down around with founders of companies and stuff. And I said, well, now we got to get your business together. And we go, well, what's the shares? Well, I had the idea, so I should be getting the most and blah, blah. And they never get it figured out, like how much they're getting, because it's a bet. How much you put in is how much you should get out. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a thing called founders.org, and you go in, they got a tool set, and you fill it all out. Just like, it's like a wiki thing. You just like, oh, how much time you put in every week? Oh, I put in 20 hours a week. Okay. How much money have you put in? I put in the $10,000 into your business, and whose idea was it, and all this stuff. And then you hit the button, and everybody, the idea guy goes, holy shit, the idea was only worth 5%.
Right.
It's all about the execution.
Sure.
Because ideas are nothing. So people get that mixed up. They think the idea is what the value is. It's not the idea. It's executing on the idea and making it happen, come to fruition. So they always get shocked when they start realizing that. So everything is about executing, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. I get a business. We talked about consciousness. We had a business class. Dude, we talked NFTs. This has been a great show.
I do want to ask you one more thing, though. I want to ask you about your, because I was talking with Remo, your friend Remo, the artist.
Oh, I love Remo, man.
He's great guy, great, right?
All those guys. He's great. What an artist. And just a beautiful guy. Beautiful guy.
Yes. Yeah, I love him. And he was telling me about
he's coming in doing a part of my Rock Money collection thing, and we're gonna
tell me about that. That's what I wanted to hear about.
Yeah. Oh, Rock Money? Yeah. So
Please.
Rock Money's an NFT drop I'm working on right now. It was started with a guy named Arthur J. Williams. Arthur J. Williams is a pretty famous pop artist. He's famous for one reason, for a couple reasons, but the one thing, he paints $100 bills into all of his artwork and stuff. It has $100 bills. And the reason for that is he is considered the world's greatest counterfeiter. Mm-hmm. He actually was the only human that's counterfeited the $100 bill and got away with it. It was so perfect. And he had that for a while. He rode that way. Then he got in trouble. And ended up having to go to camp for a while. While he was in camp, he learned to paint. Great guy. Came back. But you can imagine if you got that kind of mind to be able to figure out how to counterfeit the $100 bill. That's a pretty thing with all the laser stuff, the paper. I mean, it's crazy. The story. There's a book out on it. It's incredible. And they're in the midst of working on a movie right now because it's an incredible story. But anyway, Arthur, great guy, heavy philanthropist now. And so we started, and he was awarded like 25 never before seen early Rolling Stones photographs, which he was then taking. He believes in mixed media right now. So he's taking photographs and painting and creating cool stuff where he's making actual full physical paintings, blowing these photos up, doing photos, and then making this really kind of crazy mixed art. And he heard that I've been an amateur kind of photographer through all my years on touring, and I shot thousands of photos. And they were all black and white back in the day. So I got all my Pink Floyd photos that I had. And I'm saying, dude, I would love you. He said, oh, man, I'd love to do those. And then I said, well, I have my friend Jamie Weiland, who was Scott Weiland's wife, who's a photographer, great artist herself. And she's got all the great Scott Weiland ones. I said, let's do it. He said, oh, let's work on it. Then we came to the thing, let's launch Rock Money. What do we call this? It's Rock Money. Now, what's interesting is my whole thing is Rock Money has a movement tied to it. It has a reason. It's all about the power of the people taking back the currency, the people's movement. That's what this is. It's not that money is the root of all evil. Money is also the root of all things that can make good things happen too, right? So we're really focused on the power of the people taking back the power of the currency and decentralization, the importance of decentralization. So the word around all of this, around this NFT collection, is going to be in that. And we're going to be fine. I want to fund with some of the money we're putting, I want to fund those people that are teaching all about decentralization and getting people into the space, because we need to take this back before these were taken over and the systems take us over again, because then it can get very scary. And I don't want to, we have a shot right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough, but we do have a shot. Yeah. But anyway, so then what's happening on that, I'm now using the model where I'm saying, okay, now I've got 15 of the top NFT artists that have had the biggest drops, all building on top of these same photographs. So we're building derivative works, each one of these, And this is where I can use the blockchain again to give to these guys. And Remo is going to be working on some of those with me. So I'm excited to see what he actually does with some of these photos that we brought together. And some of the stuff I've seen is incredible. Some of the people, what they're doing, it's just going to be really cool. I got Warhol. Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know Warhol. He's a big, he's in Gabe Weiss. He's just dropping the Stoics this weekend. Which is great. And, you know, Perrin, who's crazy that paint draws with two hands, like never takes the pencil off the paper and does these crazy things. And these are all the people. So I'm really fond of all the folks right now that are in this space, because these are the pioneers in the NFT space that are being the ones that are leading the way for all the rest. So I'm very excited about them.
That's very cool. Right on. Well, hey, you want to drop any more hints about upcoming stuff, or
is that the limit
to what you can tell us?
Yeah, so a couple things. You know, I just want to say that, you know, keep an eye out. Follow me. I am Scott Page. I am Scott Page on everything. Go find me there. Yeah, just, you know, ping me. You usually hit me. I'll pick it up. Sometimes I get a little slow because it gets a little crazy, but you know, I'll usually get back to everybody if I can. I love talking to people, especially builders in this space, people that care about this space. I love the community. It's just the most exciting thing. It makes you feel like you're 30 years younger, hanging out with all these kids, and we're having a blast making stuff and creating and collaborating. You can look up Think in my band, Think X, which is, I have my brand is Think:EXP for the company, Think:X for the band, Think:NFT for the NFT space. And then I'm doing a whole bunch of IRL in real life events coming up. We've got one on the 23rd this month, which you, if you're in LA, you've got definitely got to come. It's going to be crazy cool. We're actually going to be, we're going to be featuring the Rogue Bunnies, which is all the Playmates that are doing a whole retro thing back on the early days. NFT, great people. These girls are so nice and they're doing such a great job. I love Victoria, who's kind of spearheading a big part of this. And so anyway, we're working on that. We got a big drop thing we're going to do with them, and it's going to be all the artists are coming. We're going to big paint party, got a big musical thing that's going on. It's going to be a 3-day LA takeover going on there. They're over the Quantum Gallery with all the guys from the Party Animals, another NFT group, and our Future Shape 360 guys. We just finished doing a conference up in Denver with them. And so so we're going to be starting those, and then we'll be doing our shows at the Wisdom with our immersive shows. And I'm going to be dropping these IRL events. We're going to be doing probably about 20 of them coming up. We'll be at our bathroom there, and I'm getting ready to go speak in Dubai in a couple of weeks, and going to Chile. So this stuff is blowing up and we're having a great old time. So come follow me and watch what's going on, and come to some of our events, man, and get into the community. It's mind-boggling. You will be the happiest. You'll feel so good. And I want to tell you, Remo was the one that brought me into the Goblins, which is a great NFT thing. And I love the Goblins. I love that community. These are really cool people, and what they're doing, the Goblins are doing. And so I'm happy to start being in that little community and jumping in and seeing how things are going, and start hanging with those people.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Scott, thank you so much for spending this time with me and for just sharing your energy with me. That was amazing to talk to you.
Thank you very much. And Brother Remo speaks very highly of you. And he was saying, you're going to love this guy. And I can already tell, man, we're going to get along. And let's do this again one of these days. And then we'll dive deep into some of these subjects and go down that rabbit hole a little bit. But yeah, I love
absolutely
doing it. And thank you very much for having me on your show, bud.
Thank you so much. Right on. Take care.
All right, my friend. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to the Non-Fungible Podcast. See you again soon.